Well, it's good to be here, isn't it? Good to be here safely. I was thinking, I wasn't sure how many people might come. It's not that the hurricane has hit yet, right? But it's looking like, it's feeling like it's already hit. Tonight's talk comes with a warning label. And, oops, that's my phone. Okay. Sorry. Okay, tonight's talk comes with a warning label. And so, because there may be some things in what I say tonight that will cause you to wrestle with some things. But I'll say this, that I'm not the first person to have noticed some of these things. And the other thing to say is that we are in the right environment to wrestle with these things, right? There's right and wrong environments to wrestle with some things. I'm not sure that I would actually preach this as a message to a church, not because I don't agree or don't think what I'm about to tell you is right and true, but because sometimes, you know, you talk about something and people have questions that they need to ask and answer. And so we're actually in exactly the right environment for this. This is not something that you might hear as a sermon, but it's something that is really appropriate for us to talk about and wrestle with together in our current environment. Especially because if you have any difficult questions, your table leader will field those for you, and that's all good. Why am I being so dramatic as I begin this? And what is this supposed controversy that we are talking about tonight? Well, tonight we are going to be talking from John chapter 4, and we'll be talking about the woman at the well. And what we're going to see tonight is that the love of God, which is a theme that is kind of overarching this series, as I'll talk about in just a second, the love of God being real in our lives is a love that confronts us, frankly, in places where we're at, wherever we're at, in fact. This story of the woman at the well is provocative because Jesus is engaging with a woman who is essentially a prostitute. Let's not kind of dodge the bullet here, you know. When Jesus confronts her, she has had five husbands. She's currently not married to the person who she's with. And so this passage is confrontational because Jesus himself is so engaged in, as it were, bringing this lady to a point of kind of pulling the rug from underneath her, of kind of drawing her in and then challenging her about her sin, about her need for the Lord. And what this really does is it becomes an amazing passage for us to talk and to think about when it comes to how far God is prepared to seek us out, how far God is prepared to track us down and to get down to where we are at and actually draw us out in order that we might be transformed. You see, the theme that we've been talking about in this series is that, as just starting last week, is that God needs to be as real as I said with my first pastor, as real as potatoes. But the better way to say it is that he has to be as real as barbecue, right? As pulled pork. But this idea that God has to be real in life, he has to be as real as any other person in your life, that you need to be able to relate to him and interact with him, that you need to be able to include him in all of life, and that this loving God who has made us is actually determined to come near to us. You know, in Acts chapter 17, another provocative passage, in fact, Paul says that, you know, God is not far from anybody. He says, because in him we live and move and have our being. And he actually says that God has determined the times and places in which people should live in order that they might reach out and touch him, reach out and find him. And so our God is a God who is near. And what we talked about last week was that it's only this that is really going to take us through the storms of life. When things turn upside down and we're asking ourselves the question, is the good news, supposedly, quote-unquote, the good news of the gospel, that's what the word means, is the good news really good news? Is it really something that transforms lives? And is the God of the good news really a good God? And so even as we look at this passage tonight from John chapter 4, verses 1 to 30, as we look at the way that Jesus engages with this person, where we're going with this is that I hope this will help you to see the kind of God that we have. That when he comes near to us, he doesn't just come near to some of us, or he doesn't just come near to us when everything's great. And so the feeling can be like, if I've really kind of fallen off the edge here, if I've really sort of slipped and fallen, then I'm beyond him, because he's not really going to go that far to seek me out. The reality is that we're going to see from this passage is that Jesus seeks this lady out, and in ways that are quite extraordinary, as we will see right now. It's a long passage. I've warned you already, it's John chapter 4. I'm going to have to start reading it straight away. So I'll just assume that you'll find your place to it and pick it up where as I'm reading. John chapter 4, starting verse 4. And he had to pass through Samaria. So he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field of Jacob. Sorry, that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. So Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman from Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." Jesus said, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Jesus answered, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where do you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock." Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water, so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw water." Jesus said to her, "Go call your husband and come here." The woman answered him, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, "You are right in saying, 'I have no husband,' for you have had five husbands, and the one you now have is not your husband. What you have said is true." The woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet." You wonder the tone of voice at that moment. "I perceive you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship." Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here, when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth." The woman said to him, "I know the Messiah is coming, he who is called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things." Jesus said to her, "I who speak to you am he." Just then his disciples came back. They marveled that he was talking with a woman. But no one said, "What do you seek?" or "Why are you talking with her?" So the woman left her jar and went away into town and said to the people, "Come see a man who told me all that I ever did. Can this be the Christ?" They went out of the town and were coming to him. And of course, if you know as the story continues, that the people end up believing en masse and Jesus ends up staying there. And there's real transformation. Because this lady has been transformed herself, she goes back and bears testimony of Jesus, which is so true of so many people in John's gospel. Now, there is in this passage, as one author has called it, a lingering death. Because in this passage, there is an air of temptation circling around it. Jesus says, "Give to me to drink," literally. It's abrupt, it's dramatic, and it's a little bit culturally out there, actually. Even as we learn at the end of the passage, when the disciples come back and they're actually surprised that Jesus has chosen to engage with this woman. Why would he be speaking to a woman? And then in verse 8, we learn that Jesus is in fact alone speaking to this woman. A woman who we're about to learn is promiscuous indeed. Give to me to drink, Jesus says. The use of the dative here, give to me, and to drink, the infinitive, feels like Jesus is really wanting to draw in on her and draw in on this conversation. But the fact, too, that he is even asking something from her is culturally kind of puts him in debt towards her. If you think about some of the other well-side things that have taken place, remember from Genesis chapter 24 that Abraham's servant goes and he meets Rebekah by the well, and she waters his camels, etc. And then he ends up giving her this massive stockpile of gold jewelry. And then she goes back, and then they go and invite her. And there's this kind of give and take in terms of she's watered that, he's given her the present, etc. If you look at Genesis chapter 29, another story involving Jacob, no less, at a well, Jacob meets with Rachel, and he is the one, remember, who opens up the well and waters her sheep. And as a result, she runs back and he's invited back, etc. There's something about somebody doing something for somebody that just, in a sense, creates a kind of cultural connection and a cultural kind of debt. Jesus is asking this lady for something, that she would give him something to drink. And even that kind of creates this interesting cultural dynamic. But interestingly, even, as some commentators have pointed out, the Old Testament context that I just referred to even kind of puts a bit of an element over this entire passage. You see, so often the meeting at wells and the engagement between a man and a woman ends up being a marital thing. And she, in fact, in her response, is somewhat flirtatious. You don't get it 100% in the English, but you do see that early on she talks about him being a man and her being a woman. And in fact, the Greek word for associate here is most often used with some sexual connotation. Now, you can see why I said there's a warning label with this passage. There are other things that other people try to point out. Jesus' potential double entendre with living water, based on quotes from Proverbs 5 and Jeremiah 2. But all that to say that I don't think in this passage that Jesus is in any way sinning by leading this woman on. But I do think that the evidence of Jesus' teaching in John's Gospel is that Jesus is prepared to connect with somebody, even somebody who's thinking carnally, and reach in and challenge them by, in a sense, having their own carnal things kind of come out to expose them. Remember, Nicodemus in John chapter 3 is confused. Should I go back into my mother's womb in order to be born again? In John chapter 6, verse 52, Jesus is prepared to have the people who are just looking for a meal think that they have to commit cannibalism. They say, "Are we really going to eat your body and drink your blood?" And Jesus doesn't deny that. So what's so interesting about this parable is that Jesus is willing to come and directly engage her where she is at. But the whole reason why he is doing it is in order to expose her and expose her so that she can be redeemed. You see, there's a rug pull moment in this passage in verse 16. And the rug pull moment actually makes sense in light of the idea that Jesus is drawing her out. Because in verse 16, Jesus says quite abruptly out of nowhere, go call your husband and come here. If she had been thinking in any way wrongly as a promiscuous woman, then Jesus has these words at this moment would have cut into her heart. Because now Jesus has exposed her problem. Here is a woman, as we've already mentioned, who's had five husbands and who is now with a person who is not her husband. And Jesus has met her where she is at and being willing to even engage with her in ways that would have already been culturally difficult and culturally even inappropriate. The disciples were struggling with the reality of what was happening. But in a mind-blowing moment, it seems to me that Jesus has done so in order to meet this woman where she is at. I don't think the Bible encourages us to follow Jesus' example. David and Nathan, of course, Nathan exposes David's sin by kind of leading him along with a question. I mean, it's clear in Proverbs 5-7 that, you know, the Bible talks about fleeing from temptation, fleeing particularly from sexual temptation. But what I think this passage does in a way that is quite extraordinary is that it shows us the degree to which Jesus is prepared to reach out to somebody. In ways that, quite frankly, even as I've studied it more closely, make me kind of a bit scared to even share all this with you. Because it is quite out there, isn't it? That Jesus would actually kind of cross cultural lines and be willing to provoke and challenge this woman to the point where he could expose her sin and ultimately lead her towards knowing.